Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Body Bags with Joseph Scott Morgan.
I have a lot of friends and neighbors down here in the Deep South that aren't much of a fan of cool weather. I guess that, you get used to an environment, you grow up in it, and you just kind of adjust. Certainly the environment is not going to adjust to you. That's foolishness to think that. If you're in England, for instance, and you're shocked that it's raining, then, you know, shame on you. But I don't mind the cold so much because it gets so very hot and oppressive down here that I'm not going to be one to complain when the temperatures drop below freezing down in these parts. But I got to tell you, there's cold and then there's cold. And anytime you start to talk about the Northeast, in particular New England of our country, those people live in a completely different world. And they have, in fact, adjusted to their environment. And sometimes the environment will tell the tale of any kind of case. And the case that we're going to examine today is a case that has somewhat been dictated by environment. We've heard a lot about it. We've heard about snow. We've heard about freezing temperatures. But most of all, we've heard about a police officer who was found dead or seemingly deceased in the snow. And there was no obvious cause of death in the immediate. Today, we're going to talk about the death of John O'Keefe, Boston police officer. I'm Joseph Scott Morgan, and this is Body Bags. Good to be back with you, Dave. I've had people asking me to cover this case and to talk about it. I've appeared on a variety of news programming. I never quite have enough time to go through it because the material is so dense. As a matter of fact, as we are actually recording this, I'd just been on air with my friend Ashley Banfield on News Nation covering this case actually last night. And I thought, you know, I thought Dave and I just need to hop on and talk about it. Go ahead and just kind of discuss it and see what we could come up with. Because I don't know, the Karen Reed case now for low these many months has been at the top of the news. We keep hearing about it and it kind of comes in burst, you know, and the case is about to go to trial or the trial is starting. And I thought that we would just take time to, you know, kind of talk about it a little bit and talk about some of the evidence that we know of at this moment in time.
You know, Joe, the story is complicated because of the term former that gets put into this. Because when I see two people out out on the town having drinks, and in this case, Karen Reed, a professional woman at 42, John O'Keefe is a 47-year-old Boston police officer, and they meet on the town having drinks that night. Together, going to a couple different places and have several drinks and then go to a friend's house where the party is going to continue. They arrive together at like 12:45 and Karen Reed goes home. John O'Keefe goes into the party. The next morning, when Karen Reed realizes that John O'Keefe has not made it home as was planned, she starts calling around trying to find, hey, does anybody know where John is? He didn't come home. By 5:30, she's panicked and a couple of her friends come over and they start trying to find John. They retrace footsteps. They go back to the place where she dropped him off at 12:45. And lo and behold, John O'Keefe is in the driveway and he might have been out there all night long. They don't know, but they call 911. And by the time the first responder gets there, John O'Keefe is cold to the touch and he's not breathing. That's a little after 6 in the morning. By 7:50 a.m., John O'Keefe is officially pronounced dead. Now, here's where it gets complicated. Were John O'Keefe and Karen Reed dating? As her mother said, was their relationship in a good spot? Or had they broken up? They were former girlfriend, boyfriend, and the breakup was not a good one, and it got worse when they drank.
Many times that goes to motivation of what your interest is in a particular case, you know, how you come down on either side. And that's the beauty. I gotta hold forth here for just a moment about forensics. I don't particularly care as a forensic scientist if someone is brought to justice. That's not our job in forensics to make sure that someone is brought to justice, contrary to what people say. Matter of fact, it's kind of a lazy statement because no one really knows what that means. That's for prosecutors to deal with, maybe even the police to a certain degree. But as a forensic scientist, there's enough out there. There's enough stuff for us to do. We try to examine the science that's there. And the prosecutor or the defense can use that data any way that they want to. Particularly in the world of medical examiner, you try to be as unbiased as possible. We don't really, and bad pun here, have a dog in the fight. You know, we really don't. Because if we start looking at them, first off, we're not going to be fair. Whatever fair actually means, but we're not going to be fair or unbiased is actually the better word. And we cannot go in with, you know, these kind of conclusions that we've already made our mind up because it's going to cloud our judgment. But let's run down the list. Let me kind of throw this list out to you. I was thinking about this and the types of evidence that we know about at this point in time from a forensic standpoint. Okay, they've talked about DNA. So we've got DNA, we have got obviously forensic pathology, because we're talking about pretty severe head trauma here. Matter of fact, marked head trauma. I think personally, there's going to be potentially hair and fiber evidence. We've also got a lot of digital evidence as it applies in this case. You're going to have blood evidence, which goes to trace to a certain degree, but you know where blood and tissue are transferred onto something. Either it'll be present or there'll be an absence of it. And just those points along that continuum alone is enough to spend hours and hours trying to assess this case because there's so much of it. It's a very dense case that the prosecution is bringing forward, but they've drawn their own conclusions at this point, Tom, and that's okay. That's what the prosecution does. But the defense is offering up alternative things. Oh, and by the way, did I mention we're talking about a little bit of veterinary forensics as well. So that adds another level. What a bizarre turn of events, you know, relative to this dog, because that's something that we don't typically encounter. I mean, we do, and I've worked cases involving animals, but it's just, that's just one more thing that's kind of thrown into this gumbo, if you will, and the pot continues to be stirred over and over and over again.
You know, case. Joe, you mentioned vet. Well, maybe we should mention conspiracy theory. The prosecution claims Karen Reed got into a drunken brawl with John O'Keefe, and when he got out of the car to go into a house party, she was able to back over O'Kelly, leaving him to die in a blizzard. Karen Reed's defense team is talking about the injuries on O'Keefe, and in particular, his arm. The defense claims O'Keefe went into the house party after Reed dropped him off, but something bad happened, and O'Keefe was beaten within an inch of his life and thrown outside. And based on the scratches on O'Keefe's arm, the defense says he had been scratched by a dog named Chloe that was owned by the residents of the home where the house party took place. The problem with comparing the dog Chloe's claws to the scratches on O'Keefe's arm? Chloe was rehomed to a family out of state after the death of O'Keefe. Now, Karen Reed's defense denies she killed O'Keefe. They claim she's being framed by people in the suburban party house, but this is not some social media theory. There's an official ongoing federal probe of a possible police cover-up that has turned into a parallel investigation to the murder. Reed's highest profile supporters believe that someone in the house beat O'Keefe badly, dumped his body on the snow-covered lawn outside, and then framed Karen Reed for his murder. Their take is a complicated conspiracy that involves the partygoers, Canton police, the state police, and the DA's office. An autopsy report, autopsy that was conducted by the office of the chief medical examiner said, quote, "The doctor opined that the extensive injuries to his head likely rendered Mr. O'Keefe incapacitated. The doctor further opined that upon viewing Mr. O'Keefe's injuries and her examination of the body, she observed no signs of Mr. O'Keefe being involved in any type of physical altercation or fight."
The language is going to ebb and flow with not just the peripherals that are surrounding a case, you know, family members and people that take interest. It's going to, you know, that flow is going to change with the media and the narrative that they put out there. But I can tell you this, in this particular case, when this thing does come to trial and we have this parade of forensic experts that are going to be on the stand, hopefully there will be a bit more clarity. I'm Joseph Scott Morgan, and a big shout out to Astepro for sponsoring this episode and providing free samples. I live in an area where allergies are a day-to-day issue, and finding an over-the-counter option for relief is like the Holy Grail. I use Astepro, and I strongly recommend you give it a try. Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray, and it's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays can take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can Astepro and go today. AstaproAllergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Years ago, when I got out of my field full-time, I was diagnosed with PTSD. I had sleep disorder. I had depression. And for me, I had to turn to someone to talk to, somebody that could aid me along the path to healing, to restore me to that person that maybe I was at one point in time, to make me better for not just myself, but my family. If you're thinking about therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You can do this anytime that you like. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/bags today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com. That's better, HELP.com/bags.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dave, what have I said before? For us in forensics, time is the coin of the realm, as they say. It is the currency in which we deal. People talk about the science, and yes, that is important, but we have to understand the progression of events as it applies to the victim. And the victim here is a Boston police officer that has sustained massive head trauma, and also, by the way, has had elements of hypothermia as well. And so we think about all that, and that all involves time. And I think that it's really important for us to try to talk about that a little bit and see if we can add some nuance to it and try to understand what exactly went down.
I agree. It does matter. This timeline spells out everything because there are a number of accusations about the condition of the people involved at the time that whatever happened, happened. So here we go. 7:37 p.m., January 28th, 2022. O'Keefe is seen on surveillance camera video arriving at C.F. McCarthy's in Canton. C.F. McCarthy's a bar / restaurant. Okay.
Yeah.
8:51, Reed is seen on video arriving. So she arrives, 30 minutes. He's there having a couple of cocktails. She arrives. Well, actually, it's an hour and a half later. 8:51, she arrives. Okay. 8:58, bartender hands Karen Reed a glass containing clear liquid with a lime in it. 9:15, 17 minutes after the first one, bartender hands Reed another glass. 5 minutes after that, the bartender hands Reed another glass. 13 minutes after that one, the bartender hands Reed another glass. At 9:57, the bartender hands Reed another glass and a shot glass with clear liquid in it. At 10:22, the bartender hands Reed another glass. Now, we don't know exactly what's in these glasses each time, but based on the location that it's taking place, based on, have you ever needed to have glasses of water back to back to back to back to back like that, unless you had just run a marathon?
No. I have had instances, though, where I've been out,
yes,
imbibing in the evening, and the next morning my body is screaming right out for water,
yes,
at that point in time because, yeah, it dehydrates you to that point. But yeah, and you're talking about a bartender that makes their living,
right,
selling drinks, and he's going to take his time to pass a drink, water to her every single time. Yeah, that's a kind of curious observation.
It appears to me, and it is with some experience I speak, in my opinion. She shows up at the bar much later than O'Keefe, hour and 20 minutes almost. And so she gets there. It's time to play catch up. If you've ever done this when you're out drinking with friends, I got to catch up. So yep, that's what it appears, yep, she's doing. 8:58, 9:15, 9:20, 9:33, 9:57. And then it slows down. Okay. In that hour between 8:58 and 9:57, in 59 minutes, she has served 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cocktails and a shot. Then there's a 25-minute break before she gets another one at 10:22. So now back to the timeline. 10:40, the video shows Reed and O'Keefe leaving the bar. Whew. Reed is seen holding her latest drink in her right hand as they exit. 10:54, 14 minutes later, O'Keefe and Reed are seen on video arriving at the Waterfall Bar and Grill in Canton together. I would like to know what the timeline of drinks for O'Keefe would be back at McCarthy's, to know the condition of both of them.
Yeah, I would. And jumping ahead a wee bit to the next morning, Reed's blood is actually drawn at Good Samaritan Medical Center. And a forensic toxicologist, you know, later talked about where her blood alcohol level would have been prior to, you know, when they took the blood, still at that point, and this is, you know, some hours later, they were able to determine that her BA was 0.07 to 0.08 at that point in time. And you would have had time for alcohol to metabolize. The way this happens is as the alcohol is beginning to burn off in the system, you can go back and render an opinion, a forensic toxicologist can, about what the blood alcohol level would have been like earlier. So if you've gone this period of time, you still have this amount of alcohol in your system. Looking back in time, toxicologists came up with the idea that perhaps when this all went down, which is like 12:45 a.m., her BA would have been like 0.13 to 0.29. And Dave, at that level, you're what some people call knee walking drunk at right. That point in time. That it's hard to really keep your senses
and
about you.
When we look at this in total, again, we're talking about Karen Reed's blood alcohol level, and she is with her boyfriend at the time, O'Keefe. Back to the bar. Okay, they leave the bar. They're together. O'Keefe and Reed leave to go to a house party. They call it a house party. In my, you know, when you gather together with adults and you're having cocktails or whatever late at night, I don't consider that the house party like we do when there's a bunch of young people that are just raging at a house with the music blaring and everything else. I look at it, but I don't know what I should call it. They're having a party at somebody's house, so it's a house party. Anyway.
Hanging out and drinking. Yeah.
So they get there. Now, here's the catch, all right? There are text messages from O'Keefe trying to get directions to this house party. What's the address? And I want to get this right because it has everything to do with what she's being charged with now. At 12:11 a.m., the video shows O'Keefe carrying a glass, meeting up with Reed. The two walk together toward Washington Street. O'Keefe sends a text message to a friend at 12:14 a.m. saying, "Where to?" He receives a text with an address on Fairview Road from the sister of the homeowner. 12:15, a vehicle consistent with Reed's SUV is seen on video traveling past Canton Town Library. 12:17, large black SUV seen on video traveling past Temple Beth Abraham toward the intersection of Washington and Dedham Streets. You and I have talked many times about video today. It's amazing. When yes. somebody says, "I did XYZ," they can find out if you're telling the truth if you're in a metropolitan area.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah, and you marry it up again with the timeline, and it gives you an idea. You know, between CCTV and our phones, it's almost impossible, Dave, to escape the view of these cameras and also what's pinging off.
And so they're driving together trying to find this place. O'Keefe gets a little confused, so they call to get better directions to the house. At 12:31, the homeowner's sister sends O'Keefe a text message just saying hello. At 12:40, she sends another message saying, "Pull up behind me." She's referencing her vehicle in the driveway at the house. She said that she subsequently watched the black SUV move from its initial place where it had stopped near the driveway to the far left side of the property near a flagpole and a fire hydrant, and where the body was subsequently found. Picture this in your head for just a minute of what we're talking about in terms of where the car is, where she's being told to park. 12:45, sends another message to O'Keefe. It just says hello. She observes the black SUV drive away. 12:45, she observes the black SUV driving away. Now, between 1:30 a.m. and 2 a.m., another guest at the Fairview Road home gets a ride home and indicated that she thought she saw something she described as a dark object in the snow by the flagpole, but could not determine what it was. Again, I want to go back here real quick, Joe. 12:40 a.m., woman inside the house is texting O'Keefe outside. And then 12:45 a.m., sends another message as the black SUV is leaving.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
5-minute window there.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. And every single minute in this case counts. That's why I wanted to go over this.
So we've got them pulling out now at 12:45. We've got sometime between 1:30 a.m. and 2 a.m. somebody seeing a dark object in the dry in that spot. I go to 4:53 a.m. The sister of the Fairview Road owner home receives a call from Karen Reed, who is looking for O'Keefe, and instructed O'Keefe's niece to place the call. She tells Reed that she last saw O'Keefe at the Waterfall Bar and saw them leave together. 5 a.m., Karen Reed calls a second friend, stating that O'Keefe did not come home and she was worried. According to the prosecutors now, Reed also said, "I wonder if he's dead. It's snowing. He got hit by a plow." We need to remind everyone, as you started off with at the very beginning about the weather, blizzard conditions were existing. That means freezing cold temperatures and a lot of snow, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. And when you think about it, it would be, and here's to, you know, this, you know, the witness earlier that thought, mm-hmm. you know, that they saw something right. dark in the yard adjacent to mm-hmm. the flagpole. If you're in these kind of, I don't know if this would be classified necessarily as a whiteout, but when you begin to talk about blizzard right. conditions, certainly to the less educated among us, like myself, I would think that your vision would be obscured greatly as well. You can't pick out detail in that kind of environment, particularly at night.
Didn't even think about that because it's dark, it's at night. So maybe there's some lights outside. You got the headlights of the car or what have you, but yeah, the headlights of the car are getting all snow in them. It's difficult to see 10 feet in front of your car. Anyway, all right, so here we are. It's 5:15 in the morning. All right, let me go to 5:11 because we have her comment at 5 a.m. about getting hit by a snowplow. A lot of people will say that's somebody trying to set up an alibi and a different story of what happened. Surveillance camera, 5:11 a.m. Library surveillance video captures large black SUV turning onto Washington Street toward the waterfall, 5:15 a.m. The same camera captures the SUV traveling in the opposite direction toward the temple, 5:18 a.m. A camera at the temple captures the SUV passing. 5:30 a.m. Reed and the friend arrive at the home of the sister of the Fairview Road resident, where she is described as hysterical. Karen Reed is. One of the women drove Reed back to O'Keefe's house, while the other followed in her own vehicle. During that drive, she told investigators that Karen Reed said, quote, "Could I have hit him? Did I hit him?" And told her about a cracked taillight on the black SUV. That's a lot of info right there, Joseph Scott Morgan.
Boy, it is. And, you know, the thing about it is you've got all of these different perspectives on it relative to what these eye and ear witnesses are providing. And when, and during the course of this trial, you're going to have a bevy of people that are going to come across this the stand that will offer testimony that are going to get into this kind of granular detail about time and where's that going to leave the jury, because it's very mm-hmm. complex. And what gets lost in all of this, I think, is when you begin to consider at the heart of it, what's going on with this man who is obviously missing. She's distressed over it. We don't know what the interaction truly was because, you know, you have no idea what was going on inside of that vehicle where, and what happened predating that, you know, as far as fights that were going on, or was there any kind of animosity here? Anything that would have driven one individual to try to end the life of another individual with a car.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets
you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
When we think about violent deaths in America, I think most people, their default position is going to be firearms-related deaths. And, you know, the most common type of violent death in America is related to motor vehicle accidents. So in the medical legal world, we work a lot of these cases, probably more so than anything else that we cover that's a violent event. And without fail, the underlying actual cause of death in motor vehicle accidents is, in fact, blunt force trauma. And of course, Dave, that's what we're dealing with Mr. O'Keefe's death here, is that this is what they have come to conclude at this point, that his death is, in fact, massive blunt force trauma to his head. And also, you know, he's got these peripheral injuries to his arm as well.
This case is going to turn on what the autopsy says and what the physical evidence says.
Yeah, and that is the
case.
What
were his injuries?
Because we're talking.
I'm sorry. Just to get down to it.
No. The biggest thing that we're talking about is this. He's got what they're describing as a 2-inch gash on the back.
That's a big gash,
head.
Joe.
That is a big gash. Yeah, 2 inches. And you and I both have had babies, and you know how
in this
it
day
is.
And age, I have to point out kids. That Joseph Scott Morgan and I did not physically have children come out of our bodies.
But you know, the reality is that when you're raising kids, they will crack their heads open, and it's one of the most terrifying things in the world as a parent, because you see how much blood there is.
It goes everywhere.
It does. And you're thinking, oh my God, my child.
If it happens
dying.
In the bathtub with but water, you, know, you will swear Jaws 27 is being filmed. That's how bad it is.
It is bad. But we have to consider something else that has been noted about Mr. O'Keefe's remains when they were examined. He's got bilateral black eyes, which, you know, we talked about before. This is indicative of skull fracture. And I think that he's got extensive skull fracturing. So here's one idea I want to throw out to you, Dave. We talked about the amount of blood that is absent from the scene. Some people have described it as little or no blood. And again, we have to also say that this is during a snowstorm. So I don't know how deep they dug, because working a crime scene in the snow is completely different than what most people have ever envisioned. Based upon the fact that he has sustained this trauma to his head, remember the raccoon eyes? I think that there's a fractured nose, there's a fractured skull. There's going to be a lot of internal bleeding here. And as a matter of fact, when you have a closed head injury, I've actually been present for autopsies and have removed brains at autopsy where there's so much blood contained within what we refer to as a cranial vault that sometimes it'll come pouring out, and other times you'll see these big coagulated masses that are focused on one side of the brain. Like if you think about the back of his head, where his head actually impacted either a surface or was impacted by something else, in that little area, which is posterior, I would expect to see like this huge mass of blood that's probably coagulated and resting over the surface of what we refer to as the dura, which is the sac that the brain is actually contained in. And that's called an epidural hemorrhage. I would expect to see that. I'd also expect to see probably some little vessels that are torn in the brain itself, where you'll have bleeding within the sac and maybe contained within the brain itself, which is what's referred to as subarachnoid hemorrhage. So you're going to have this huge mass of blood that has begun to leach out. The underlying probably floor of the skull has been fractured. And they're going to talk a lot about this in the case. This is a tremendous amount of trauma. And yes, this can happen. I know that people wonder, can this happen from a single blow? Particularly if you're talking about a motor vehicle that's traveling at a sufficient rate to generate the kind of energy, because this is a transfer of energy where you have a car, which is what the prosecution is stating, where a car literally strikes an individual. Here's the problem. When we work what are referred to as pedestrian versus motor vehicle cases, that is, you've got a person that is not contained within the structure of another motor vehicle. They're just there, you know, as a person standing outside of the vehicle, and they are struck. We look for something called bumper marks, Dave, because most of the time you're going to be struck either with the rear of the vehicle and that bumper, or you'll be struck in the forward area. Now, many times when you get a presentation of bumper marks, it's going to look like it'll have kind of a linear structure to it, where if you think about the thighs or the knees, if somebody's just standing in the middle of the street, you'll get this kind of bilinear because you've got the margins of the bumper, and it creates a hemorrhage. It also creates an abrasion. We're not seeing that here. We're not seeing that. And so I really wonder if we just kind of go with this idea that he was backed up over, which the prosecution is putting forward. His posture is very important here, because we're talking about a cracked tail light. We're talking about an individual that has struck his head. I really wonder, Dave, if they're going to discuss whether or not he was standing or seated. And if he has been drinking, there's a high probability that he could have been seated or crouched behind this vehicle. And this would explain the absence. They haven't talked about a bumper mark. I haven't heard anything about that at this point, because you have to have that point of contact where the bumper is actually meeting up with the body, with the person, and then generating enough energy to throw his head back so that he impacts onto the ground. And that's something that they're really going to dig into, I think, in this
case. Got a dead man and two different stories. The prosecution claims that Karen Reed got into an argument with her boyfriend inside her black SUV, her Lexus, in the driveway, and it became so violent that he gets out of the car and she runs him over and takes off. The defense is claiming that they were fine. They'd gone out for drinks. He wanted to go to this other party at a friend's house, and she dropped him off there and went on about her merry way. And apparently something bad went wrong in there, and a bunch of cops all got together and decided, after beating him up sufficiently, to take him out in the driveway and leave him out there and then frame Karen Reed for murder. Those are the two different, that's what we're going to court on. Either he was beaten up by his friends and left out in the blizzard to die, or he was run over by his now what they call former girlfriend and left to die.
Yeah, well, let's throw one added little bonus in here, too, in this environment, in this house, Dave. And that's this issue of the dog.
That's what I was going to ask you. Where does the dog fit into this, Joe?
Yeah, because what they're saying is these there's a this photo that's floating about that the defense has presented in the proceedings where we see this image of Mr. O'Keefe's arm. And Dave, those he's got these kind of strided marks on his arm, and they're very kind of uniformed and linear. And they, the defense, is saying that this is evidence of a dog attack. And okay, I mean, I'll go down that road with you. They're talking about potential puncture marks, these sorts of things. And I have worked, and I have a lot of friends that have worked dog attacks. Unfortunately, I've had cases where children have been killed by dogs. I hate those cases, but those injuries are very, very specific. So here's what I'm going to be very interested in hearing. I want to know if the defense in this particular case is going to hire, and these people do in fact exist, Dave, hire a veterinarian that specializes in forensics, because they can talk about the bite mark of a dog. Now, for whatever reason, this dog no longer exists. They say that the what's the term that's so popular now? The animal was rehomed. And I've heard other people say that the animal is no longer with us. And look, you know, that dog is gone, and there's no way that you're going to be able to get that dog. And, you know, if you could, if the dog is deceased, was it incinerated, or was the dog buried in somebody's backyard, or was it trashed, or, you know, what happened? Because, you know, the kind of the forensic scientist in me, I would want to render down the dog's skull and have a forensic veterinarian really take a look at these teeth. And if you could compare them to the injuries that he has on his arm, but I don't really see it. And look, all of this is, this pales in one area that I'm more curious about than anything.
Please tell me it's about the
and
car.
I haven't heard it. We'll get to the car, but here's the thing that no one seems to be talking about. And forensic investigations are layered, okay? And in this case, I literally mean that, because if you've got these insults to Mr. O'Keefe's arm, where's his clothing? Because the clothing is actually going to be the tail of the tape, if you will. So you're telling me in blizzard conditions, even if this man wore a jacket into the home, you're going to tell me he stood around with his jacket on? Wouldn't there be evidence of tears in the jacket? And tears that are generated from the underside of a motor vehicle compared to what an animal would do to a jacket looks completely different. Let's just say that he took his jacket off in the house, and are you telling me he's walking around in a t-shirt in this weather, or he doesn't have a sweater on or a long sleeve shirt in this particular type of brutal weather? I think that he probably would. Well, what's the status of the shirt? Are there tears in the shirt? Did they look for any kind of transfer evidence that would be consistent with two things here? And we're exploring both possibilities here. Is there a potential that there could have been animal hair or saliva on that shirt adjacent to the tears? Because what you're saying is that the defense is saying that these are puncture wounds on the arm. They've talked about puncture wounds, and maybe they're scratches. Well, did the dog leave behind any kind of evidence of that? And if that's not the case, then if he was hit by a car and his arm went up in a defensive position, we talk about defensive wounds, okay, you know, with knife attacks and that sort of thing. If he went up trying to, you know, thwart this blow that he saw coming, you would actually get road debris, like grease and grime. We see this all the time in rollover injuries with cars, that would transfer onto the clothing, and it stands out. I mean, it's very visible if the car actually went over his body. Now, if it's just a straight on like strike, you know, where his head or another portion of his body hits that tail light that they say was fractured, and then he slams into the ground, I would be very interested to see, well, what evidence is there on the clothing relative to any kind of road dirt, grime, grease, anything else that might give us an indication. The clothing is going to play a big role in this. And to this point, I haven't really heard anybody talking much about it.
You know, I was telling you when we were talking about this, I had to change a tire on the side of the interstate a couple of weeks ago. And just dealing with just the tire, lug nuts, and just this one, I was filthy. And I didn't crawl up underneath. I've actually, you know, gotten filthy from head to toe. I couldn't even stop anywhere to wash off because I was that dirty. I just wanted to, you know, bottom line here, what condition are his clothes in and why haven't we seen these yet? Because either he was beaten by his fellow officers inside the house and drug out and dropped in the driveway to die in a blizzard, or his girlfriend got into a fight with him. And while he was maybe crouched behind the car, been overthrown up, I don't know, she backs over him hard enough, gets enough speed going that she can hit him hard enough to break that taillight, which, to be honest with you, Joe, not an easy feat. Taillights, and they don't break easy.
Yeah. No, they don't. And it's high-impact plastic. There's a reason they're made that way, Dave, so that they can, you know, we can travel in our vehicles, you know, through this world that we indwell, and it's not going to come apart, even with the slightest bump. There's a reason it's thicker than most plastics that are out there. That's one of the things that makes it high impact plastic. And they're talking about two separate lenses here. You've got the kind of red color that's fractured, and you've also got the clear lens that's fractured. I think that goes to backup lights. And that lens is actually, both those are actually fractured. It is claimed that DNA from Mr. O'Keefe is found in this collection of fragments. Here's another piece to this that everyone should be keeping their eye on in this particular case, because you're going to hear trace evidence scientists that are going to be getting up on the stand, and these people are fantastic when it comes to plastics and glass. They will restructure this thing, and they'll talk about points of impact. One of the things that you see with fracturing of glass in particular, but to a lesser degree with plastics, is you'll get this kind of bullseye spider web pattern that kind of extends out, and it fractures in different ways, and they have ways they measure all this, and they can talk about velocity and all that. And so we'll hear from those individuals here. One other issue here as well is that there is actual literal glass that they're saying came from a potential fractured cocktail glass that he may have had in his hand, that this has been found around the area as well. So you've got this dynamic of fracturing that's going on, not just with the victim, with his skull, but we've got glass that he may or may not have been holding in a, you know, I don't know, like a highball container, like you make a mixed drink in. And also this lens that's coming into play here. So it's very dense material when you think about just the perspective of the impact event, because that's going to be key, because that goes to the narrative that the prosecution is putting forward. Can you explain this in simple terms to the jury, so that they understand, okay, this is what happens when you back a car up and the lens fractures upon impact. This is what you would expect to see. And is that consistent with what they were seeing at the scene?
What about autopsy, Joe?
The autopsy itself will be, again, I go back to this idea of the bumper mark. Are you...
Yes,
not you, but in the universal sense, the universal you. Are you saying that this distinct event involving his head with this nasty injury, that is a closed head injury, by the way, and you got the fracturing with the blackened eyes and maybe a fractured nose. Are you saying that his head hit the taillight? Because, again, that has to be demonstrated at autopsy. And they're going to ask the forensic pathologist, is this consistent with a car backing into an individual? And can you generate this kind of injury? If let's just say that he's in, and just go with me here just for a moment. If he is in kind of a crouched or seated position And he kind of raises up and is struck by this oncoming vehicle that is backing over him. You would not, you would see some kind of abraded area on the surface of the skin. Let's just say he's struck in the front, and we know that this impact on the back of his head, he had to have hit a hard surface or was hit by something heavy to generate this laceration. This is not a cut. This is not an incised injury. This is a laceration. So you're going to have the tissue bridging that we've talked about before with unclean margins. It's essentially the skin ripping in that 2-inch area. And that's a sign of impact. So you begin to go down this road and you think about how are they going to translate that in this case so that the members of the jury will be able to understand it.
When everything's said and done, according to the Office of the Medical Examiner, the doctor opined that extensive injuries to his head likely rendered Mr. O'Keefe incapacitated. The doctor further opined that upon viewing Mr. O'Keefe's injuries and her examination of the body, she observed no signs of Mr. O'Keefe being involved in any type of physical altercation or fight.
Yeah, I've heard some say that there was bruising on the hands. And, you know, bruising on the hands most of the time implies that you could have been in a fight. I'll be curious as to that assessment to see, because again, we go back to this friction that's placed on the skin. So not only, let's just say you have a bruise on your hand after a fight, and maybe you have underlying fractures. Well, you have to have point of impact relative to that. And the skin, this friction injury occurs with the abrasion. You'll have correlating abrasions over this area that lead to the bruising. Okay, the bruising comes about as fracturing of the bone, you know, and you get this, what they call ecchymosis, you know, contusion that leaches out into the soft tissue. We'll see how that plays out as well. I'm interested in understanding his response. And when I say his response, I mean Mr. O'Keefe's response to whatever was going on in his environment at that point in time. That brings it back to the arm. If he was run over, say backed over, I hate to say run over, because with a run over injury, which you get, and actually there's a classification, a category that we talk about with bodies. They have what are called rollover injuries. And these are fascinating because your body gets caught up by the tires and it's kind of rolled under the vehicle. So you'll get all these kind of weird, odd looking abraded areas where the skin, there's so much friction, the skin's kind of getting twisted, you know, within the clothing. You'll see transfer evidence off the undercarriage of the car. That's typically what you see where you have a rollover injury. But what they're saying is the car apparently was used almost like a battering ram. It wasn't like a traditional pedestrian struck by an oncoming vehicle and then, you know, kind of bump, bump, where the car goes over the body. It's not what they're saying. What they're implying is that the car was weaponized and that it was used almost like a battering ram. So this guy's behind the car and you slam it into reverse or whatever, hit the gas on a snowy surface, by the way, and you hit this guy and knock him down and then you drive off. Okay. So is there going to be evidence of that? Were they able to recover any kind of tire tracks off of this as well, which again is kind of a fascinating thing in this environment. Again, we're fighting with blizzard-like conditions. Were they able to identify anything, in snow in particular? And again, granted, I'm an old Southern boy, so I haven't worked many cases in snow. I've had a couple, but you know, when these forensics people that are amazing up north and they have to deal with snow and they're dealing with tire tracks, they have to put down to capture these impressions in the snow. They've actually got this kind of spray on wax that they put onto the surface of the treads and they can lift it out. It's a painstaking process. It's not like, you know, we use like what's referred to as dental stone. You know, if you have like a muddy track and you mix this dental stone up and you pour it down on top of the track and then it hardens. You know, you lift it up and you pick out all the details. So to do this, to capture that kind of evidence in the snow, you got to really know what you're doing. I would hope that they had looked, at least photographed, you know, some evidence of tire tracks in the snow. And does anything, would those tire tracks approximate the wheelbase of this Lexus that they're talking about? So a lot to unpack, a lot to dig into, but, you know, when it's all said and done, the people that are court observers here that watch true crime, when they see everything laid out, it's going to be certainly an education when it comes to basic forensic principles. I'm Joseph Scott Morgan, and this is Body Bags. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.